And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Move the Sticks. DJ Bucky back with you. Buck, how you doing, man?
Man, it's good. Good. I mean, we keep talking about ball being great. Like, we had a great football weekend. We had a pretty solid Monday night game. So everything is good. It was solid. It was solid.
What is going to be great is our buddy Jim Nagy, who runs the Reese's Senior Bowl and is a longtime NFL scout and good friend of ours. He's going to join us, talk about what he's seen in the NFL, as well as preview a little bit of who could be coming to Mobile for the premier all-star game in the land. So we're going to talk to Nags a little bit later on in the show. But you can't say that was good football last night. It was not good football.
I mean, I said it was good. I said it was solid. It was good.
They literally was a fourth and it was trying to go down and win the game, and they found themselves in a fourth and 28. That's where we were at last night. By the way, did you watch the regular broadcast or the Manning cast?
I watched the regular broadcast. I saw all the comments about people talking about
the Manning cast. Why are you not watching the Manning cast? What am I missing?
I don't know. I was being lazy. I was doing a bunch of training videos and all kinds of other stuff I had to do at high school.
It was kind of in the background for you.
It was in the background noise and all that other stuff. But I heard the Manning thing was good. I heard Marshawn might have slipped up a little bit.
I didn't see the beginning, so I missed the Marshawn part, which is probably a good thing because of some of the language wouldn't have been a hit in my household. But I did see Brady was on there and I saw Breeze. It's just a fun. It's what we do on Thursday nights. It's what we did last year. It's what we're doing this year on Amazon and on Twitch, which. Just kind of hanging out, watching the game. I think we probably stick to the play-by-play maybe a little bit more than they do. They can get lost in stories and all that. And when you got a crappy game, I'm all for it. I'd rather hear Drew Brees and Eli and Peyton telling stories than watching dirt balls and airmails. You know, like I'm good on that.
Yeah, it's a lot to deal with when you're watching the guys that were playing, but.
I mean, did you think of the Browns though, watching that game last night? You know, we've talked a lot about Baker and how much do you pay him, and then you kind of look and see, whoa, this is what it could look like. Like you better have. I'm still of the belief that you don't go top shelf, top dollar for Baker, but you better have the answer on campus when you decide to do that, or give yourself a couple years to find the answer. By dragging this thing out with franchise tags. But you don't want to just say Baker's leaving the building and we're starting a Geno Smith type quarterback and we can't get it. You know, we can't move the football. That's a problem. Yeah.
No. You have to weigh your pros and cons. And I think the big thing, though, you can't control the other side, right? You can't have a reasonable discussion with the agent like, come on, man, look, here's where your guy is. Here's where your guy is in comparison to the others. I would say that maybe he ranks middle of the pack. Top 15, so we will give him middle of the pack money. Oh no, look at all the wins and all that other stuff. Yeah. And then your side is the agent is also looking around and like, hey, you want to play with Geno? You want to play with this? Who do you want to play with? And so it just makes it difficult and challenging. So I can't wait to see what that deal looks like whenever it is done and whenever they do start talking. Because I do wonder what those initial numbers come in at. What is the annual per year and what is the total package that the Browns offer up? Compared to what we're thinking, what Baker may think is it's going to be in the 40 million plus club. That's a lot, though.
The other thing I was thinking of was just thinking it from Russell Wilson's standpoint, because we've been hinting at the fact of, man, you know, maybe Russell would try and get his way out of there. It was a storyline last offseason. But I wonder if Russ steps back and looks at this, and if you're, you know, kind of thinking of the history of the game and think of some of these elite teams, like even just think of the talent on the Browns. That, you know, backup quarterback goes in there, not a problem. Like, they got enough dudes. They're fine. I go back again to my kind of growing up as, you know, as a Cowboy fan in the 90s. It's like, Jason Garrett's got to play a couple games. Wade Wilson's got to play. It don't matter. We're fine. Like, this thing is a Cadillac. You saw it with the Patriots, even when Tom Brady missed that season. What Castle go like? 9-7?
They went 11-5. Like
were they 11-5? Yeah.
They were 11-5, but didn't make the playoffs. Yeah.
Yeah. So... And I'm sitting here going like, man, we can't get a first down without me out there. Is this roster really good enough for me to go get another championship? Like, is it that type of a roster? Mm. Or do I try and, you know, squeaky wheel gets the grease, to quote Bucky Brooks, try and get my way out of here?
Man, it's like, yeah, so you're saying maybe the leverage is flipped all over again, where we were saying like Seattle be like, yeah, we're getting a little bored with you, Russ. You're a little blind, high maintenance, this and that. And then they're like, maybe.
Hey, maybe got no first. They got no first round pick. They have no first round.
Yeah, maybe we need to pony. Maybe we need to pony up and make sure Russell's happy, because Russell hides a lot of the issues that the team has. It's an interesting discussion, because it now, see, because it's one thing, DJ, when we have those discussions in the offseason, mm-hmm. because we're anticipating next year's draft class being loaded, right?
Yeah.
We just get a young guy, we'll move on. But now that we have seen what potentially could be in the
and
the
they pipe, don't even have a first round pick anyway.
Right. And so now it becomes different, because now we're beginning to put players in those slots where the picks could be, and you're like, I don't know.
Yeah.
It changes the situation, it changes the conversation, and the leverage now goes back to Russell, because Russell has shown you what they look like with him, and the others have shown what it looks like without him.
I think it also shows you that some teams are QB driven and others aren't. So mm-hmm. if you're a QB driven team, you lose your QB, major impact. Don't necessarily, the Browns are super QB driven, you know, and so that's a little bit of the difference there. But you know, you're paying Russell Wilson a ton of money, and maybe you can say that's one of the reasons why some atrophy on the rest of the roster. You can make that case. I think it more so probably just missed on some players in the draft than anything else.
I would say missed on a lot of players. I mean, you go back and you look at the drafts, that has been the big thing that has kind of undone the Seattle Seahawks. The success that they had in, was it 2012? 2011, 2012, when they were able to really not only get the guys in later rounds, but they were able to have that hit rate on undrafted free agents and those things.
Yeah, well,
that's long gone. And the hit rate has not been as high for them with their top picks, and they haven't been able to uncover those hidden gems that have been the pillars of the team during their heyday. And what happens is it's a slow erosion from inside out with the team. And then you're forced to go and make a move like you had to make for Jamal Adams. You're having to go and get a Dwayne Brown, because the natural way, the homegrown way, has not necessarily given you what you needed in terms of those players developing and becoming big-time players.
I have no doubt. Any other takeaways from the game last night?
The Seattle Seahawks can't run the football. And so for a team that fancies himself as like a rough and rugged physical team, Pete Carroll has not been able to get this team jump-started. I thought Shane Waldron would come over and actually give them a little different take on the run game, more zone-heavy, more like the L.A. Rams and that stuff. And the plays are the same, but the production is not there. And listening to DeMario Davis talk after the game, and he says, oh, we knew we had to come down there and cram the run. We had to stop the run and put it on the backs of Geno Smith in the passing game, and we didn't feel like they could get it done. And teams are stopping the run. And I like their receivers, DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett, but I don't think they are the artists that some of the guys are. Like when we look at the Rams receivers, the Rams receivers are get open specialists, because I think there's artistry to their game. I think DK Metcalf is a freak of nature, which enables him to just kind of run past people or overpower people on the perimeter. Tyler Lockett is a nice complimentary piece in the passing game. I don't know if either one of those guys has the skills to separate. And so when this becomes a drop back game where it is all predicated on the quarterback and the timing of the playmakers on the outside, I don't know if they're good enough to get it done playing that way.
Well, they got the Jags coming up, and the Jags are coming off of a bye.
That's right.
So it's no Russell Wilson for one more week. The Jags coming off a bye. If the Jags get the Seahawks in that one, they are in trouble, man. They are already in trouble, but that would make them what, 2-6?
And it's such an uphill climb in their
division. They're five games back in the division already.
I mean, it's such an uphill climb because the Rams and the Cardinals they're already up there. And so now, DJ, what you're looking around is because it's very top heavy in the NFC. Mm-hmm. Maybe six teams, 5-4, 2-5-2 or better makes it hard, because now what you're doing is in the locker room, you're selling hopes and dreams. All right, guys, we just get on a run. We can still backdoor into the playoffs. But if you're four games out of the wild card,
yeah,
that's a hard sell. It's a hard sell. It's not a believable sell when you stand in front of the room and you kind of talk about that stuff.
All right, that's enough about what I thought was kind of a clunker of a game. All right, we're going to get to our buddy Jim Nagy, is the executive director of the Reese's Senior Bowl, longtime NFL scout. We're going to get to him right after this. Jim, appreciate you taking the time for us today, man. I guess first question, we'll get to all the Senior Bowl stuff and everything you've got going on, but I'm just curious, you know, as a scout, what you've seen in the first part of the NFL season here, what stood out to you?
Yeah, DJ, I just say the unpredictability of the league right now. If you would ask me to predict, you know, finishes and stuff before the season, I would have been dead wrong. You know, what Arizona's doing, being undefeated, I wouldn't have saw that coming. Just really that whole NFC West, kind of that how that division's shaking out with Seattle and the 49ers not looking, you know, looking like themselves. And then you go towards East Coast. I mean, I think Cincinnati's a great story. Cool to see Zach Taylor and Joe Burrow kind of putting that thing together in Cincy. And, you know, they've had some good wins. They've had some really quality wins. So that team's for real. So I would just say kind of the unpredictability of where teams are at right now.
You know, Jim, having been in this league a long time and having worked for a bunch of different teams, what are some of the trends that you're seeing that kind of stand out to you?
You know, I would say, I we talked about this a little bit before we went on, but just I think the teams that are staying current and staying fresh with concepts and using their players. I think Tennessee is a great example. I mean, for 3 years now, everyone knows Tennessee is going to feed Derrick Henry the football, right? I mean, it's no secret what they do. And they're finding ways to be effective and using their players. And, you know, with Cincinnati, some of the young players, you know, it used to be back in the day, you guys know this, you draft players with teams you worked for. I remember in Kansas City, we drafted Rodney Hudson. He was the first four-time All-ACC player in the history of the conference, and we gave him a redshirt year. You know, like, there's nobody more ready to play than Rodney Hudson. And he sat for a year. So I think you look across the league, Ja'Marr Chase is a great example. You look at some of these quarterbacks, I mean, they're getting them on the field, and some of these young guys are really playing.
Well, I'm curious. I want to get your thoughts on Mac because, you know, Mac Jones, you had him at the Senior Bowl last year, had a really solid week down there. You know him. He trained down there in Mobile. I'm curious, how much would you attribute the success that he's had thus far, clearly been the best rookie quarterback, to Mac himself versus a situation you're very familiar with there, having spent all that time in New England?
Yeah, I think Mac deserves most of the credit, but we all talk about fit mattering, and it does. It matters. You know, him going to New England, that's a great spot for him. What they've done with Tom up there, again, you don't want to make those parallels to Tom, but, I mean, really, a lot of their strengths are similar. They align. We, you know, all last spring, the three of us, I know you guys heard you guys talking about it. I mean, you know, very cerebral, gets the ball out quick, accurate. I mean, all those things. The thing is, I haven't seen a young quarterback play in the league that looks that comfortable in a long, long time. I mean, you can point to some of these other guys that, you know, have better tools and, you know, make more wild plays and whatnot. But just in terms of, I'm just talking about comfort level. Mac looks so comfortable out there. Some of the stuff he's doing under duress for a young guy, getting through progressions. I mean, I've heard people take knocks at him that he's, you know, checking down a bunch and they're not stretching the field and he's not taking deep shots. But to me, to get to some of those outlet receivers, like, you don't see a lot of young guys do that. Those are sacks. Yeah, I think that was a great fit for Mac, and we're seeing, I think the record too, they're 3-4. I think he's played better football than that. You know, they've lost some close games to some good teams like Dallas. I think as we see the year go out, they're going to win some football games down the stretch here.
You know, and thinking about that, because the league is fascinated with a young quarterback, right? Everyone is trying to figure out how they can have the instant fix at quarterback. And we're seeing a lot of these young guys struggle. So when you're evaluating quarterbacks for your game, what are you looking for in quarterbacks?
I'm looking for what the league wants. No, I mean, you're trying to stay. We talk about trends. DJ asked about trends. We're looking for guys the league wants. So that's athletes, that's guys that can come in and play and be ready. You know, like there's no timetable. You guys, we used to draft guys and you'd sit them for a couple of years. They're all getting on the field. So they got to be ready to play. So we're looking for guys that have been experienced. I mean, right now in this year's class, look at Kenny Pickett. He's done a great job this year and really elevated himself. He's going to be ready to play next year. You know, like, he's a guy that I know. I mean, there might be some other guys with higher and upside that can be debated right now, but Kenny Pickett can get on the field and play next year. So, you know, I think that's the biggest thing, Buck, is just getting guys that have played some football and they're going to be ready to go. They're going to come down here and they can handle this week too. I mean, you guys have been down here. It's a stressful week. There's a lot thrown at these guys, so they got to handle this week first. And to me, if they can handle this week, that's a great sign of these NFL teams. That's why you see guys like Justin Herbert and Mac Jones and Daniel Jones. They handled this week well, and they parlayed that right in the NFL, and those teams probably felt good about getting them on the field early.
I know, Jim, we always talk forever in scouting about guys. You know, it used to be that old Parcells thing, the number of starts that you wanted to have. You look at the situations. Mac's a great example. Why he didn't, you know, he wasn't a 4-year starter at Alabama. He was in the program though for a long period of time. So you got somebody that might not have on the field game day experience, but he's practicing against the best defense in the country every single day for several years. And he arrives in the NFL just more mature, having more, not only, you know, life experience to go along with football experience. And it just feels like the Burrows, again, another one who's just was in college for a long time. These guys, it's a leg up. It's an advantage for them versus so many of these. We see these redshirt sophomores and young guys coming into the league. Outside of Kyler Murray, most of those guys have struggled a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's a great point about the practice reps and the defenses they're going up against. That's where I think some of the major program guys have an advantage. That's where Desmond Ridder in this class, you got to look at that defense in Cincinnati. He's going up against good people. I mean, they've got a lot of NFL guys on that defense. Them being number two right now isn't a fluke. There's going to be a lot of guys up this Cincinnati Bearcat defense play at the next level. So that's big. And you know, that's a great scouting point you make too, DJ. You guys know that. I mean, you want to look at some of those matchups. I remember, I mean, going way, way back now, but like when Jake Long and Lamar Woodley were together at Michigan or, God, who was the left tackle at Virginia when he was going against Chris Long? Who went to the Jets?
Ferguson. Yeah.
So that's a scouting trick. You guys know that. You go into the school and you want to see that practice tape of one-on-ones. Practice is huge. I mean, that's why going up to Alabama is a huge thing every year. Some of those practice that's so competitive up there, you'll get takeaways from a practice in Tuscaloosa that really help you give conviction as you go through the process, even more so than what you're seeing on the tape. Sometimes those practice views are really, really valuable.
You know, in thinking about what you're talking about, the young guys and the guys you guys have been able to identify, when we talk about quarterbacks being a primary position, it's always edge rushers. And you guys have had outstanding speed rushers and edge rushers in the game. Once again, leaning on your scouting experience, what are some of the core traits that you're looking for with those pass rushers that come to your game?
Well, you guys know, if in order to transition, usually guys in college, they can win with one thing, right? They have speed or they have power. It's trying to find guys that have more than just the fastball, more than, you know, they can change it up a little bit on you. So that's key to me, whether they have the counter coordination or they just have really good feel as a rusher, but they got to bring something else to the table. If you see a guy that wins with just speed or bringing it way back again, like a Vernon Golston who just, you know, won with his bull rush, I mean, that's not going to work at the next level. So really trying to find those guys that have multiple things and can win in multiple ways.
You know, I was thinking about it here, Jim, as we kind of march towards your game. Could you fill out a whole game just going to Athens? I mean, can you just bring Georgia and just bring at least the defensive side, just bring the whole defense to Mobile?
I was at the South Carolina game earlier this year, guys, and they are so much fun to watch. And I've made this point to a lot of people here locally, you know, comparing this Georgia defense to some of the Alabama defenses in the past. And I think if you went back to like that 17-18 Alabama defense with, you know, Rashawn Evans and Minkah Fitzpatrick and some of these high first round picks, this Georgia team might not stack up like first round pick to first round pick. But where they're different is just the team speed and just the ferocity that they play with. I'll share you this quick story from my trip to Athens. I talked to Will Muschamp before the game. You know, Will's coaching special teams for him now. And it was funny the way he told the story, that just his tone of voice was more as an outsider's perspective. And he said, Jim, if you saw our team run periods after Tuesday's practice, he's like, we could charge admission to that. he called it a bloodletting. He's like, all these guys are so fast and they're so competitive. He's like, it is so much fun to watch. And he was talking about what Kirby has built there. You're seeing all these recruiting classes, five-star after five-star on top of each other. And then the competitive stuff. So again, like when I went to that game, they keep the two safeties in, those two guys are locked in, then they rotate the other nine guys, even the corners come out. So when they get on the field, it's almost like a coach's dream, right? Like you get those guys on the field and they just play with their hair on fire and then they're out. They're in for three or four plays and they're out. it is so much fun to watch. Again, I don't know how many first rounders they're gonna have. They're gonna have a few. For sure, but that is as fun a defense to watch as there's been in the last 10 or 15 years of college football.
You know, it's funny because we're so used to thinking about the best players coming out of the SEC because that's where we put the best scouts. Typically, that's what we have seen. Give me a team that is loaded with prospects that is not in the SEC.
I would probably go back to that Cincinnati team, guys. I really would. I mean, Desmond Ritter's getting a lot of the hype, and he should. I mean, Desmond's going to be one of the top quarterbacks. I think this year's quarterback class is going to be very similar to last year. in that, you know, that top five went there in the top 15, but you guys talk to guys all around the league as I do. I mean, if you talk to 10 teams, they would have all had a different order on those guys last year. And I think this year's class is going to be similar, you know, with Desmond Ridder and Malik Willis and Kenny Pickett. I think Kenny's played his way into that conversation. There's a couple juniors that I don't want to talk about that will probably enter that mix as well. But yeah, so that's that, you know, that's really going to be a fun position group to kind of watch them work it out. But Cincinnati's defense with Myjai Sanders, Kobe Bryant, they got Sauce Gardner, another junior corner. Again, he's probably going to come out just talking to the guys in the building there. Darian Beavers brought, you know, Brian Cook, the safeties played really, really well this year. So I would go for a quote unquote group of five school. I mean, you're going to see 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 guys drafted off that team, maybe.
I'm going to ask you about a guy that's not draft eligible because we can make the rules. But just being in Alabama, I'm just curious. It's a year, we're a year away. But what's your take on Bryce Young, what you've seen from him just watching Alabama play?
Yeah, I'll take it back to last summer when I was out in your neck of the woods in Santa Monica for Steve Clarkson's QB retreat and got to spend some time with Bryce. First of all, man, like his parents did an unbelievable job raising that kid. He is so grounded. And you watch him throw. I mean, the ball really comes out. And you saw that last year when you were evaluating Mac and Bryce would get in late in games. I mean, there was a difference in arm strength between Mac and Bryce. And that's the crazy thing. You get up on him. He's not a very big person. I was at the game in Tuscaloosa on Saturday against Tennessee. And what I really liked to see was Bryce running a little more and using that athleticism. And I don't know if that's been dialed back by the coaching staff. I don't know if that's like self-preservation mode by Bryce himself, that he doesn't want to expose himself running the football. For a young guy, he does a great job of maintaining his focus down the field. That's what I like. But him just using his legs this week and pulling the ball down, he's a pretty unique talent for a smaller quarterback, like the live arm. Like there's some really uniqueness to him.
He is a very unique quarterback. I don't know, even going into high school, I don't know if he ever really utilized his legs a lot. He's always kind of fancied himself as a passer. And so it'd be interesting to see if he does utilize that part of it. Is there anybody else that we could be missing at quarterback? Because we asked you about Bryce. You mentioned Desmond Ridder. Who is somebody else that out of the blue could kind of tickle our fancy as a top quarterback?
You know, Bailey Zappe at Western Kentucky is a really interesting guy coming over from Houston Baptist with his coordinator. Mm-hmm. He's just one of the guys. He reminds me a little bit of like when Gardner Minshew started to enter the mix his senior year. You know, I started getting calls from some buddies out west like, hey, you better check out this guy at Washington State. And we all remember Gardner's background with, you know, him being at ECU and being at Troy and being at community college. You know, Bailey's, you know, is kind of a similar path in terms of him, like a 1 year guy at the FBS level. You watch the Michigan State game, you watch the Indiana game, you know, like his high profile games, right? Playing up against Big Ten teams. And he played really good football in those games. But really at the quarterback spot, we can't talk enough about Kenny Pickett because of where he started the fall. I mean, I don't know if he, you know, we've seen Joe Burrow jump, we've seen Mac Jones jump. And I'll take this back to last year. You know, we invited Kenny Pickett last year to the Senior Bowl. He didn't officially accept his invite, but I got a call from Kenny. He wanted to talk through, Jim, where do you see me at? You know, where do you see me at? Where are you hearing from your friends in the league where I'm at? And it was really fourth or fifth round. I was really open with Kenny. Like, I never BS these players. I told him right now, if he came out, you're probably a 4 or 5. I said, most teams see you as a really good backup. You know, a guy that could come in and hold the fort down. You know, I told him he reminded me of Kirk Cousins coming out a year ago. And I'll raise my hand on that when I was wrong on Kirk Cousins. Like, he has far exceeded. I thought Kirk would be a really good backup player in the league. And he's obviously been way more than that. So I was wrong on Kirk. But so to see Kenny come back and really put it all together. And I just watched him again the other day. The arm strength is better. He's throwing the ball with more zip. He's not forcing the ball. He's cut down on turnovers. He even looks, you know, even athletically, I don't know if he lost weight in the offseason, but he's getting out of trouble more, just putting a lot of good things on tape. So, you know, it's going to be a really interesting pre-draft process with this quarterback group and to see how it all shakes out.
What is the last question for me on the prospects? Not specifics on players, Jim, but just strength-wise thus far, Senior Bowl-wise, where is the position where the board is just stacked?
Tight end. Tight end is loaded.
Oh, guys. Interesting.
It's a really good class to the point where I think we're probably going to under-invite at wide receiver and maybe over-invite at tight end a little bit.
That's never happened before, ever.
Never. That's never happened. And you guys know, the league's looking for tight ends right now. I hate to say it, but you guys know this. Wide receiver is a dime a dozen position. There's a million of them. I mean, every school in the country's got two or three guys that are catching 60 balls now. So you can find those guys later in the draft. Everyone wants big, big tight ends and like dual tight ends. And there's a bunch of those guys in this year's draft. So that's a really heavy spot. We're usually stretching to get to like six guys we feel good about coming down to be
usually draftable. It's like some hybrids, dude. Normally you got to get some hybrid fullback, H-back type guys in there just to fill it out.
Kylan Granson, Trayvon Wesco, Josiah DeGuara. I mean, all those guys went third, fourth round.
But
this year we'll be it. We could probably invite 12 tight ends that we'd feel good about. In a normal year, we're probably stretching to get to six.
Wow.
Man, it makes me feel good about my little number 8 jersey down there in Senior Bowl lore in history that I was one of the last of the wide receivers that could go down there and be a big group. Now we only have 2 wide receivers and 8 tight ends out there running around like Kyle Pitts.
We're going up
wide at X. I mean, yes, just shrinking them off the field, just moving them off the field, Jim.
Wow, that's awesome.
No, and we've been lucky, guys. I mean, the last couple of years, you look at the game and with the Chase Claypools and Debo Samuels and Brandon Ayuk and Van Jefferson. I mean, there's been some really good
Cooper Kupp really good wideouts. Okay, too, class, going back to that one.
Yeah, this class is just a little thinner at the wide receiver spot.
Yeah, well, Nags, it's great to catch up, bud. I'm kind of in the early portion of my process here. I've done some Alabama defense. I've done some Georgia defense. It was a pretty good place for me to start as I was as cranking up, and actually a good group of tackles that I've been able to kind of get through the top 4 or 5 guys. Including the kid from Northern Iowa, Penning's a good player. So there's it's a good group, man. I love catching up with you during this time of year, and we're gonna keep doing this as we march towards the Senior Bowl. Have you had a Reese's yet today though? Can I finish you up with that? Have we breakfast, brunch? What time do you have your first Reese's every day?
I went Kit Kat at about 9 a.m.
Okay, nice. Kit,
also a Hershey product. So
there you go. Yeah, it's all our family.
Yeah, they get us a couple 400-pound pallets a year. Twice a year we get a 400-pound pallet. So that second one's coming soon. It's gonna
on that point. I mean, there's got to be some pressure on the Reese's Senior Bowl come Halloween. You guys got to do something, man. I mean, you're literally sponsored by Hershey Company here, and it's Halloween. Like, what do we have going on with the Senior Bowl for Halloween?
Well, I will say this: the kids in my neighborhood know which house to come to because they get the full size Reese's cups. They get pack Twizzlers.
Nice.
So yeah, maybe we're the house to hit once a year. I think the kids all know that by now.
All right, there you heard that. Everybody in Alabama, make your way over to the Nagy household. Get yourself some good full size candy. Jim, you're the best, bud. Good to see you, man.
Yeah, great to see you guys. Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right, Bucks. Great to catch up with Jim. Great as always. He's just he's a great dude. Does a great job with the Senior Bowl. They've you look at all the guys they've been churning out, especially at the quarterback position. Just identifying the right guys. And I think we've seen time and time again players go into the Reese's Senior Bowl week with their stock at a certain level, and then using that week to really elevate themselves all the way up.
Yeah, I mean, it has always been kind of one of the benefits of playing in the Senior Bowl is the opportunity to elevate your draft stock, because you get a chance to play against the best of the best. You get a chance to play in an NFL system coached by NFL coaches. Everyone is there, and it's a big stage. And we have seen the guys who shine the brightest on that stage tend to have immediate success in the National Football League. Going back to when we used to see Aaron Donald, and you're like, man, is this guy going to be able to dominate? But then he dominated everybody throughout the week and continued to be a dominant player. And I mean, there are a million tales we've seen those kinds of players. So it's a great opportunity to show and prove to scouts in the football world that you are ready to be a guy that can have immediate success at the next level.
No doubt. All right. There's one other topic I want to get to before we wrap things up today. It's baseball related. We always like to bounce around and talk about team building and different sports. So I've got a baseball thought I want to hit you on, and we're going to do that right after this. All right, Buck. So I'm listening to Tim Kawakami's podcast, and he has Farhan Zaidi, who is the president of the San Francisco Giants, who's one of the most respected guys in baseball, had been under Andrew Freeman with the Dodgers, leaves the Dodgers after they've had all that success, goes to the Giants, and they've quickly turned things around and led the major leagues in wins this year, even though they were outed by the Dodgers in the postseason, ousted by the Dodgers, I should say. So fascinated by him and the analytic approach that he takes. And there were two things he said on this podcast that stood out to me. So I want to get your thoughts on him individually. The first one was, so when he was interviewing with the Giants, he said he like interrupted the owner when he was interviewing him and said, look, just so you know, don't ask for a 3-year plan, a 5-year plan, or a 10-year plan. I don't really believe in that. Our plan is we're going to be better this year than we were last year. And then the plan is to get better the next year, like taking each individual season one at a time and just focusing on being a little bit better the next year. And he said, eventually we'll get to the point where we can have sustained success once we get to that level. But the focus in our direction is always going to be in 1 year increments. I thought that was fascinating.
Yeah, no, I think it is fascinating, but I think it's the best way to do it. One of the best coaches that I ever played for was Marty Schottenheimer. And Marty Schottenheimer coined the 1-0 mentality, right? Mm-hmm. We're going to focus on this week. This is the only thing that is important for us. We can put all our efforts into making sure that we maximize who we are this week. And at the end of the week, we want to make sure that we walk away with a W. And when next week comes, we'll go right back to having a 1-0 mentality. Yeah. I think what he is suggesting is let's focus on this season, because sometimes we can get too far in the weeds thinking about the possibilities of the future. And rather than how can I make this team great for the month of April and May and June? And then as we get down the stretch, what moves can we make in June, July, and August to put us in a situation where it really means stuff in September when it counts? You think about the Atlanta Braves, and we've talked about this privately. The Atlanta Braves basically flipped their team in the middle of the season to go from a sub 500 team to a team that is now in the World Series. DJ, if you have handcuffed yourself to the notion of, well, in 2 or 3 years, we'll be good. So we just need to ride this out. You're unable or unwilling to make those moves. But if you are a team that is, one of the best team for this year, and when next year comes, we'll deal with next year. You have that freedom and flexibility because your mindset, you're not so locked into this long-term thinking that can prevent you from missing out on great opportunities when it comes to building your roster.
It's really interesting, man. The other thing that he said in there, which kind of ties in with this, is he said he was asked about the fact they only have one of their pitchers that's under contract, one of their starting pitchers for next year. So they have four open spots in their rotation. He didn't even seem mm-hmm. worried about it. He's like, we've proven that we can get the most out of the performance of our pitchers and done it with their hitters as well. But we've seen guys come in on one-year deals and play really well and then launch themselves into other contracts. And so basically the thought process is we're going to find guys that are coming off of an injury or that are coming off of a down year, but they're talented. So we identify the talent. We believe in our development and our ability to get you to perform at a peak level. So I put it in my own words here, basically was we're going to pay our own guys as they come up through our system because we have all the knowledge of them from a health mentality, mm-hmm. work ethic. We know everything about them. We're comfortable. We'll pay those guys. So we'll pay them. We'll buy our own players. We'll rent free agents. We're not going to bring in free agents on these 6 and 7 yes. and 10 and 12 year contracts. Free agents come in. We'll identify talented individuals. We can get them on a 1 year deal. They come in, they play well, they're motivated, helps them, helps us. And then we can cycle through some of those guys. They don't mind doing that. I thought it was fascinating, man.
Well, I think that is fascinating. And I think it's a unique approach. We see it in basketball all the time, right? Yeah. We'll see teams take the veteran exemption and kind of build the back part of their roster with these guys on 1 year prove it deals or 1 year deals to fit in while they're chasing rings and mm-hmm. those things. We've seen some teams in football a little bit with the 1 year deal, kind of putting it together. Like you can do it in Tampa a little bit because now you have Tom Brady and everyone is chasing a ring with him. So you get Antonio Brown and Ndamukong Suh and some of these other guys to kind of roll the dice at the end of their careers because they're chasing a championship. But what the Giants are suggesting is at a critical position, right? Pitcher mm-hmm. is the way that you have to win the World Series. They're saying that we want guys on 1 year notes that are either highly motivated or very undervalued. Mm-hmm. And their value is depreciated either coming off an injury or coming off a down year. But their skill set suggests that they should be able to bounce out, kind of bounce back from that situation. To me, when you do that, scouting staff has to be good in terms of being able to know, like, at his best, this player is this. Mm-hmm. At his worst, this is where he is. And then the people who handle the money and the cap, they have to be able to slot, well, what does that value approximate to? What is the right value? What are we willing to pay for what we call maybe an educated guess or gamble? Mm-hmm. you build it out that way, you have success. And then if you have a ton of success doing that, your place becomes the bounce back squad, where you come play for us, you thrive. Mm-hmm. We may not pay you.
Yeah.
Somebody else may pay you.
Yeah. Yes. That's where you want to go if you're a player, right?
Right.
I think want to go somewhere I can play at a high level, get paid.
I think that's kind of a Miami Heat type deal when it comes to basketball. People go to Miami in a way to rebuild their career because people talk about Heat culture and mm-hmm. how they develop the players and all of that other stuff. So you play your best in Miami and then you go and get paid elsewhere. And it's a business arrangement where everyone, all parties understand exactly what this is. Mm-hmm. This is an opportunity for us on a one-year rental to have the best team that we can have. It's an opportunity for you to play the best that you can play. And then at the end of the day, either we will pay you or someone else is willing to pay big money for your performance that you did while you're with us.
This is the reason why I bring this up and tie it back to football, because we got the trade deadline coming up. And one of the things I think you can kind of look at the Giants situation is they've been able to identify guys and say, okay, we believe in the talent. Maybe they're a little bit misused. You know, if you're a mm-hmm. pitcher, maybe it's their sequencing, how they sequence their pitches. Maybe, you know, if he would just use a slider more than he's doing there, we will help him with how to incorporate his weapons. And I think about football, like the Jags, you tell me about this guy. Like, I'm intrigued by a guy like Kalyvon Chaisson, first round pick for the Jags, mm-hmm. highly athletic coming out of LSU. I don't think he's a great fit for what they're doing right there. Hasn't been successful. Is that somebody that another team can say, you know what, but what he does really well, you know, he can run and we can free him up from responsibility. We can get him detached and let him just kind of chase and hunt. And we can get more out of that player than maybe his team that has him right now. Let's identify him. I could just see like some of these first round picks over the last couple of years. Jalen Reagor hasn't been a big hit for the Philadelphia Eagles. Like, does some team identify him and say, okay, well, we can cast him in a role where maybe we think he'd be more comfortable and maybe we get more out of him? Because you get picked in the first round because you have ability. Nobody gets picked in the first round that has no talent. These guys do have ability. It just, for whatever reason, hasn't worked out.
Yeah, so this is funny. And I'm so excited and privileged because I played for both of these people. So Al Davis and Ron Wolf. I learned a ton about personnel and player acquisition and development, having played for the Raiders and the Packers, but I did it in reverse order because I played for the Packers. So I would always hear Ron Wolf tell Al Davis stories, mm-hmm. right? So one thing that Al Davis and the Raiders have always done, if you go back and look at the history, particularly when Mr. Davis was alive, they always kicked the can on first round picks. Mm-hmm. And Mr. Davis would always talk about when someone is drafted in the first round, they have a level talent. Mm-hmm. Our job is to see if a chain of scenery or a new scheme or a new voice in his ear can maximize that talent. Ron Wolf did the same thing with the Green Bay Packers. And we've all been around executives that kind of took a similar philosophy when mm-hmm. it came to that. Hey, when you're drafted in the first round, typically, DJ, you get three bites at the apple, right? It's the first bite where you get drafted. It's the second opportunity where someone gives you an opportunity to redeem yourself. And it's the third by the scout that was in love with you. That's like, those guys didn't know. I'm going to give them one more shot.
Yeah.
And so it is really about, and we talk about this, the most important part in trying to make sure that a guy flourishes at the next level is how do they fit into the scheme and environment that they're being brought into. And some guys, you get them and it's just not a right fit. So when you talk about Kalyvon Chaisson, mm-hmm. Kalyvon Chaisson was a guy who needs to come off the edge and use his athleticism. He's not a traditional linebacker. He's not that. He has to be a go, go, go hunt guy. And he has to have a move or two where he can get to the quarterback. But the athleticism is certainly there. We saw it at LSU. He's a former high school basketball athlete and player. There's some stuff there. But maybe in a different situation, maybe you can max out his talent where you can see some of the production from him that you would expect from a first-round pick.
How about a guy like Leonard Fournette? I hate to keep going back to the Jags here, but Leonard Fournette.
Hey, DJ.
They couldn't trade him, just cut him loose. He was a top five pick for a reason. He's a lot of ability there.
Four.
Yeah.
And so here's the thing, and here's what's so funny about the Fournette deal, right? So you can either look at things a couple of different ways. Half empty or half full when it comes to the glass. Mm-hmm. What can he do or what can he do? And so there was always a lot of conversation in Jacksonville about, well, Leonard Fournette is not an integral part of the passing game, and running backs have to be a big part of the passing game. They have to be able to make plays or whatever. Last night, we saw Alvin Kamara mm-hmm. make his impact as a receiver. where Leonard Fournette is not an Alvin Kamara, Christian McCaffrey guy. He's a check down option.
You can screen him. Yeah.
Derrick Henry
yep.
is not a route runner.
You can
runner.
Screen him. You can swing him.
You can yep. get him. And so what we're seeing in a different environment, different coaching staff, they're using playoff Lenny in a different way. And now the Fournette that I'm seeing in Tampa Bay is the one that I was like, oh, at LSU, absolutely. He's yeah, absolutely like a stud. Yeah. He yeah. looks like that. And it is amazing how that goes. And some of it is environment and scheme. And some of that is also Bruce Arians may have a hotter poker. He may know how to poke the bear a little bit to get the performance out of it. But I think as a top evaluator and executive, you also have to understand you got to scout your coaches as well as your players. And you have to make sure that the players that you bring in can respond to the scheme and the coaching that you're going to provide them based on who you have.
Mm-hmm. Well, trade deadline's coming up. If I'm a GM right now and you're looking for some help, identify misfits, right? Guys that just don't fit where they are. Identify teams that are struggling because you might be able to get, you know, pennies on the dollar.
Desperation.
And then I think you identify the talent, right? Just who are the guys that were viewed at one point in time as high-end talents? How can we get it out of them? So I think you're going to see it. We're going to see some trade that gets done before the deadline that'll be mm-hmm. it'll be a key addition to a team that goes on to have a lot of success in the postseason. I guarantee it.
Yeah, I guarantee it. It's a couple of different things because it coincides with the trade deadline. Because after the trade deadline, where you talk about the player acquisition, where you get that marquee player who's either devalued, underappreciated, misused, that happens at the trade deadline. 2 to 3 weeks after that, DJ, the next step to happen is you now find the veteran player who can help you get down the stretch. Mm-hmm. Meaning there is always a thing, and I'll go back to Ron Wood. Always sign a key veteran who might be on the streets, who hasn't played a ton, who might not have played at all this year, but someone who has experience playing in those big games in the postseason that can kind of get you going. And I'm saying this, I'm saying, just keep your eye on Larry Fitzgerald, right? Just keep your eye on a player like a Larry Fitzgerald who we know it might not take him long to get ready to play, but maybe if I'm the Arizona Cardinals, maybe I'm checking in and being like, Larry, you might want to just kind of run around a little bit because if we have a situation with A.J. Green or DeAndre Hopkins and it's a four-game run, then the playoffs, maybe that's an impelling opportunity for you to chase a ring as opposed to, hey, that 17-game grind is long. Yeah. But if I can get ready in a month for the postseason run, and there's some other players that are out there that offer that kind of I can get you to chase it.
Wow, you draw a little breadcrumbs there. You draw a little breadcrumbs there.
That's a thought. I mean, because if I'm Larry Fitzgerald, you know what I am? Because I'm in town. I'm looking at the Cardinals. I'm like, oh, now they want to be 7-0.
Yeah, so really?
Now they want to look like now they want to look like a Super Bowl team. Yeah. I might text Steve Kahn and be like, sup?
Yeah. I think Mattingly kind of leave the Yankees right before they went on all their postseason runs. You know, like really, he stunk the whole time I was here.
And now you want to go on an epic run for a decade where you win like 5 World Series, and here I am trying to.
Yeah.
90 baseball. Yeah.
Yeah. Brutal. All right. Well, let's get out of here. This has been fun today. Again, thanks to Jim Nagy, our buddy, for joining us. Appreciate you guys hanging with us. We'll catch you next time right here on Move the Sticks.